Let's get our view from the middle. You can find his work for USA Today. Well, if you're in a hotel lobby, you could probably find it at the front desk. Online, usatoday.com. Follow on Twitter. Use the handle at George Schroeder. We welcome in George Schroeder. George, how you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
Everything is great. I love this time of year.
Yeah.
So I was reading... You're involved in something rather unique. It's called the South by Southwest Interactive Festival. You're going to be heading for Austin. I can barely understand the title. It's been taking place for nearly a quarter century. So is this a case of a sports journalist stepping outside your normal wheelhouse? Technologies, websites. I'm curious as to what the connection to our world of sports is.
Well, look, it started as a music festival. It became sort of a film festival and a digital interactive festival. It's kind of a gathering place for creatives, and it's a fairly big conference. And about 3 years ago now, in fact, it might have been four, but I think it was 3 years ago because I've done this for 3 years, they started a sports track. And they wanted to see where sports sort of intersected with pop culture, where sports intersected with technology and innovation, things like that. And so, USA Today Sports wants to be involved with that, and I was fortunate enough to be the guy they tapped to do it the first time out. We talked with Cliff Kingsbury, the Texas Tech coach, about innovation in college football and sort of trying to, you know, change the culture in terms of being innovative, both X's and O's, and just what you just sort of, you know, not a hidebound traditional college football coach. Chip Kelly would have been really good for South by Southwest, but I don't think he was interested. and sort of the Oregon, fashion forward type of the way they go about things. But this year, Stanford has come a virtual reality thing. One of their former kickers for his graduate thesis tried to see how virtual reality could be used as a training aid for players in football. And the guy that was his professor is probably the foremost researcher into virtual reality in the world. His lab is where everybody comes to, you know, special operations guy, to try to figure out how they can use virtual reality. And what's grown out of that is, yeah, you can use virtual reality in football. And so they started using Stanford football as a guinea pig. Kevin Hogan started using it when they filmed a few plays. David Shaw was good enough to let them film a few plays. They used basically a stick, and then they've kind of got a multi-eyed camera on the top of this five-foot-tall stick, kind of basically a tripod, that they set up in the location where the quarterback would be, and it films the plays. And the quarterback really is kind of limited to a drop back or a handoff. You got to be careful not to run into the stick. So there's some limitations with it so far. But if you slip on the headset and the headphones, you are immersed in the play as it happens. And if you start out looking straight ahead, you can see the defense. If you swivel left, you see the defense. If you swivel right, you see the defense. If you look up, you see the sky. If you turn all the way around behind you, there's the running back. It's unbelievable. And so they started, they started thinking this. And then you watch the play unfold, and you watch as you make the correct reads and throw the ball, and you see what the safety did in the corner and everything else. It's unbelievable. And so they sort of thought that it might be a big deal for backup NFL quarterbacks if you could get sort of a library of plays who'd get no reps, but then they could sort of take mental reps, basically. And you know what? And so various coaches are using it for various different things. So that's a long explanation to your short question. But Brett Bielema and Arkansas have bought in whole hog. And so Brett Bielema is going to be there along with Derek Belch, who's the former kicker and grad student. And he's the co-founder along with this professor at Stanford of Striver Labs. And it's become a pretty big deal. Several NFL teams have signed up. A half dozen to a dozen FBS teams have signed up. I mean, it's a pretty big deal, they think it's going to get bigger and bigger. Now, if it does or not, I don't know. But as the technology gets better, it can only get better.
What's the name of the lab again?
Striver. Striver. Striver.
All right. The reason I ask is because now I want to go see if they're publicly traded. Maybe add it to my IRA.
Yeah, or at least be ready for when they have the IPO, right?
You got it. That's awesome.
I mean, look, it's gone from a few people taking a look at what they had, which was just a few basic plays of Stanford's in a hotel room at the NFL Combine, to four or five NFL teams signing up there. To them showing a few college teams and five or six signing up for last spring, to them, you know, they've probably quadrupled the amount of teams they have, you know. And you know, the questions are, where does it apply beyond a quarterback? People are doing it for a middle linebacker. They're doing it for a safety. Coaches, college coaches, have decided the full immersion experience is not a bad thing to do for recruiting. So let's stick that thing right in the middle of our run out the tunnel. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Let's shoot that. Let's shoot the middle of a team meeting to show them what it would be like if you're an offensive lineman in the middle of your offensive line meeting. Let's, you know, you're limited only by your imagination, basically, on what you can do with it in a lot of ways. And, you know, as the technology changes and increases, it's amazing what they'll be able to do. But just how they've evolved with input from coaches suggesting, could we do this, could we do that, how they've evolved in a year is really something.
Yeah, and not ironic that it's the program right there, very close to the Silicon Valley. We continue with George Schroeder, USA Today. So I mentioned it's March 9th, conference championship week. Selection Sunday's in about 96 hours. And while I know you love, love, love college football, this time of year, still rank up there pretty high on your personal fave list?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, next weekend, a week from tomorrow might be a week from tomorrow, and then the Friday after that might be my two favorite days on the sports calendar, the first round days of the NCAA tournament. You know, this week is interesting, just championship week with all the conference tournaments. It's kind of fun. But, you know, once you get to the Power Five tournaments, there's not a whole lot of drama there other than seeing. You know, really, it's those smaller tournaments that are largely done by now. The one bid leagues, those are the ones that are fun. But this is the time of year. I mean, Selection Sunday is always kind of fun. And then there's a little bit of a lull for me. You fill out your bracket, or yeah, in my case, you fill out six brackets and hope that you get some team through somewhere. And then come Thursday, it's just, man, hunker down and watch. Now, my deal is I'll be at the Oklahoma City Regional, so I'll be working Thursday and then games are Friday. But as much as I can watch, it's a great time of year. And I love college football, and I think that the playoff has accentuated tremendously, and I think any Saturday in college football is better than any regular season day of college basketball. But those first 2 days of the NCAA tournament are a national event.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. Actually, I wanted to get to college football. Playoff director Bill Hancock, I read he used the term blowback regarding those starting times of the national semifinal games on New Year's Eve. So this year they're going to stick to December 31st, but they moved the kickoffs back a little bit. It would be noon and 4 for my West Coast audience. You think this is related to the 31st landing on a Saturday, or did the ratings dip maybe get their attention?
Both. It's the ratings dip that got their attention, but it's the fact that it's on a Saturday this year, December 31st, New Year's Eve is on a Saturday, that allows them to move the kickoff times earlier.
Sure.
Because if it was a Friday or a Thursday, and it was a Thursday, you know, this last year, if it was a Thursday, you've got people that are working in all time zones. And if you moved it up an hour earlier, you're just going to make it harder to see that first semifinal. But what you do when you move them up an hour earlier is you make it less likely that you're going to cause trouble, with the New Year's Eve celebrations with the second semifinal. Or at least
right,
you can kind of go, you could go late to them if you wanted to and still see the ball drop in every single time zone, basically. So, 3 and 7 Eastern time, noon and 4 Pacific, is a good move this year. Now, you know, it doesn't address the long-term issues of whether or not they're actually going to be successful in playing those semifinals on New Year's Eve. It won't matter next year, by the way, because next year the semis rotate back to the Rose and Sugar, which will be played on January 1.
Oh.
So it's not until the 2018 season that you have to deal with it again. I don't think you're going to hear a whole lot of complaining this year because it's on a Saturday.
I gotcha. Good info. You posted a story yesterday about a new rule announced in college football, in essence regarding what the guys in the replay booth can do with information they're viewing. I know there are similar proposals have been shot down in the past, but takes effect this year. If you can kind of fill in the blank, I think it's a one-year test, and it gives replay booth officials a say when it comes to targeting.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that's actually a one-year test. What is a one-year test is the idea that if a conference wants to, it can set up communications with each replay booth in each league, and they can collaborate on calls with the stipulation that the replay official is the one making the call. And I don't know how you actually figure that out. I mean, there'll be black helicopters circling around every fan's thought about that. But let's be honest, they already pay the officials, so if they really want to influence the outcome of games, they can do that. But that's one thing, the sort of centralized command center where each replay official can collaborate with, say, the coordinator of officials back at the conference office. What you're talking about, though, is not, it's not really a one-year deal. It's just an expansion of the replay. It's a tweaking of the targeting rule as it relates to replay and an expansion of the authority of the replay official. All right, there are two things. One, he's going to be allowed to, in the rare, and they're extremely rare, in the rare case where everybody on the field missed a hit that was clearly targeting. And I talked to Rogers Redding. He's a former supervisor of officials who's now the rules editor for the Football Rules Committee. He said in all his film viewing and review of last season, he saw two instances where he thought that might have been called. In those instances where everybody on the field misses it, every official on the field misses it, but it should have been called, the replay official now has the right and the ability, the authority to make that call. That's the first thing. So that's new, and it's a slippery slope. They admit it. They don't want people throwing flags from the booth. They want penalties to come from the guys on the field.
Right.
But it's a very limited application, and they're not just going to be out there looking for it. It's going to have to be really obvious. The second thing they're going to be able to do is they're going to be able to determine intent or attempt to determine intent. Well, they have, the thing about targeting that frustrates people is sometimes you think, you know what, the guy didn't intend to target. There were a couple times last year when you saw a guy just get blocked into a guy. The officials threw it on the field, and you thought, well, they'll overturn it on the replay, and then they didn't. And the reason they didn't is because you had a replay official going by the letter of the rule, doing what he was, which I think is probably by and large the right way to do it. But he could see the kid was blocked into the contact, but he didn't intend to target. But all he was supposed to determine was, did he strike him forcibly about that, the head and shoulders, or did he strike him with the crown of his helmet? And if one of those two things was there, he had to uphold the target. Now they can say, look, he didn't launch himself into him, he got blocked into him. So they'll be able to try to determine intent, which I think that's a good expansion of authority for the replay official too. Those probably won't impact very many plays of the course of the season, but it could be a critical player too that could be very important to somebody that they could, to get the call right would be a great thing.
No, I like the way it sounds. Now we'll see the practice. Final question. Obviously, we'll get to the specifics of the big dance when you're getting ready to go to OKC, but Peyton Manning retired. I think everybody noticed that.
Wait a second. Okay.
You got it?
Yeah.
So, in essence, from 1994, when he was a starter at Tennessee, through last month, I mean, if you think about it, over the past quarter century, if you think about Peyton Manning, be it Tiger or Mike Tyson, is it possible to have been more prominent or front and center as an athlete, as we've seen during this past, in essence, 21, 22 years?
I think that a good way to determine his impact would be to go look at birth records in East Tennessee and in Central Indiana over the last, starting in about 1996, 1997, and see how many boys are named Peyton.
Awesome.
And certainly in East Tennessee, you would see a lot. I mean, there have been stories written about that, studies done on that. But look, he's kind of been that, the image of the All-American boy. Now, obviously, there were some issues early in his career. Some of them have been dredged back up over the last few weeks that would belie that image. But his image has been that of sort of the All-American quarterback. You know what I mean? Mom, yeah. Apple pie, and Chevrolet. And, you know, obviously in his case, it's apparently it's Papa John's. And I don't know if you noticed this, but he drinks Budweiser. apparently it's that. But I mean, he's been sort of the all-American kid, and I think that's part of the reason why he's been such an effective pitch man and sort of been, you know, a guy we've seen on TV a whole lot, even when he's not playing.
No, I just thought it was fascinating to look at him beyond what everybody's doing. You know, is he as good as Brady? So, like I said, that's a really good take. All right, so travel safe. That sounds like a really interesting thing. You're going to visit in Austin, and then, of course, you'll be on your way to OKC. And a week from today will be all about the madness. Thanks a lot, George. Great stuff as always.
All right, man. Look forward to talking to you next week.
All right, take it easy.